So in your own personal history, you talked a lot about psychotherapy.
Right.
And I'm really glad, Ken, also, that you had so many therapeutic experiences.
Yeah, 30 years, and it's still not working. I think my therapist is going to put in a salad bar, I think, so I can just feel like I'm wasting time.
And I'm curious specifically how you see therapy and meditation fitting together.
Yeah.
Complementing each other or not.
Yeah. It's a great topic, and I've it's probably the one that I've written on as much as any. There are a couple of simple ways to talk about it, and then of course you just get as complex as you want to, because you can bring in quadrants and levels and lines and states and just write textbooks on the stuff. And when you still don't know that much about it, a lot of this stuff we're still learning, and has a lot to do with the research that we can do. There's a traditional statement that the traditions often make, and that has to do, in a sense, with the two truths, relative truth and absolute truth. And the relative truth is the world of the dream. But the dream is still important, but it's just a dream. And absolute truth is the world of waking up. And therapy, in a sense, stops the dream from becoming a nightmare. And spirituality causes you to wake up. So they're kind of, in that sense, ultimately dealing with two different sort of planes, if you will, or two different dimensions. That said, though, a lot of spirituality, of course, has techniques in the relative plane. So the question is, how do those, interact with psychotherapy and what's going on? Another factor to look at, as we sort of give broad overview of this, is that much of what Western psychotherapy has done is look at what happens from the time an individual is born until the time they're an adult. So they look at all the early stages of development. Freud, of course, most famous for this, the early psychosexual stages of development, all the things that can go wrong when you're 1 year old, 2 years old, 3 years old, and so on. We have a whole sort of pantheon, a very good understanding of the types of things that can really go wrong with these early, particularly the early stages of development. And so a lot of psychotherapy has to do with looking at the snarls, the tangles, the neuroses that happened on our way to adulthood. In most of the traditions, spiritual development starts when you're an adult. I mean, you basically become a monk or a nun when you're in your late teens, early 20s. And so there's not an intense investigation on these sort of pre-rational stages, the stages leading from pre-rational up to rational. You sort of come in, you start your practice at rational, and spirituality sort of takes on from there and takes you into these trans-rational states and stages. And so they don't have a really good understanding of a lot of these really, really early sort of knots and neuroses and snarls. And one of the simplest ways to sort of put them together, and again, there are a lot of exceptions and overlaps, is that psychotherapy is dealing with sort of the pre-rational up to the rational, or the pre-personal up to the personal. And spirituality takes the personal into the transpersonal. Psychotherapy looks at the formation of an ego, a healthy ego, and then spirituality looks at transcending that ego. And there's a sort of an understanding that you kind of have to do both of those, that you have to be somebody before you can be nobody, you have to develop an ego before you can transcend it, and so on. And then if you don't do both of those, then something goes wrong. So that's kind of a quick pass at it. But there's a great deal of overlap in terms of what psychotherapy does and what spirituality does. And particularly one of the main practices of many forms of psychotherapy is simply bringing awareness to bear on your interior. And awareness is a curative factor. Awareness itself is curative. And so you might be that you have a dream and you come in, you report the dream to the therapist, you talk about the dream. You are objectifying it in a healthy sense. You're detaching from it. You might talk about your relationship with your lover, your husband, your wife, and you're having this problem and that problem, and you talk about it. You're objectifying it. You're looking at it. And every time you do that, you fall into just that pattern we talked about of transcending. You're taking something you identified with and you're making it an object. So you're freeing the witness more and more from its false identifications with these little selves and little problems and little pains that come and go. And the more you look at them with a kind of evenly hovering awareness, the more you're getting free of them. So it doesn't matter if you look at them in Jungian terms or Freudian terms or Gestalt terms. We have a whole lot of evidence showing that psychotherapy is equally effective no matter what the actual content of the belief of the therapist. And has much more to do with factors of awareness and acceptance and non-attachment. And if the therapist is Freudian or Jungian or Gestaltian, tends to be secondary to how effective the therapy is. And it's not to say those things aren't important. They are. They're very important for many reasons. But awareness itself follows that pattern that we talked about earlier that Bob Keegan summarized development as, which is the subject of one stage becomes the object of the subject of the next. So anytime you objectify and look at something, you're becoming free of it, you're breaking its hold. Then you can embrace it with equanimity and love. Then you can actually embrace it fully. You're not dissociating from it. That's more pathology. So there's that kind of similarity in most forms of introspective therapy as well as spirituality. The one big difference is that even if there's a similarity there, if nothing else, transpersonal spirituality or meditative spirituality pushes much harder, much deeper, much higher, much wider, whatever you want to call it. They really push through that capacity of awareness until that awareness runs right into God, literally. So absolute spirit, the absolute witness, is that which is witnessing everything moment to moment. And so the ultimate shift in identity is not just from my neurotic self to my healthy ego, but a shift in identity right to that transcendental self that's aware of the ego, that's aware of Ken Wilber, aware of Tammy, or aware of George, or aware of John. That transcendental self, generally you don't get that on the couch. You don't get that in psychotherapy. Not that you couldn't, it's just they stop the game short when you're relatively functioning as a healthy ego. And the only reason they stop the game short is they don't know you can push the game farther. We just don't have a culture where that has happened a lot. Although obviously there are transpersonal psychotherapists and there are some new forms that do try to push into these higher states like psychosynthesis and the diamond work of Almas, Hamid, and so on. And those, I'm very fond of all of those approaches because they take the psychotherapeutic endeavor and they push it to infinity. They push it to spirit. They push it to Godhead. Under those circumstances, I think that conventional psychotherapy combined with sort of transcendental spirituality is a really wonderful combination because it covers the whole sort of ascending and descending currents in the human being that we talked about. And of course, by transpersonal spirituality, I also mean the descending current as well. It's not, you're not supposed to just ascend and get out. You're supposed to descend and embrace the world of samsara and manifestation and Gaia and nature and so on. Those two approaches together seem to be much more effective than either alone as well. And that's also interesting. When somebody's doing something like Zen meditation, while they're also doing something like conventional psychotherapy, this conventional psychotherapy goes faster because you are accelerating your capacity for witnessing, for non-attachment, for evenly hovering awareness, which on the feminine side is radiant love, capacity to love everything that's arising moment to moment and not be partial in what you love. So the two of them together, it's sort of like cross-training, and you do both of them together and they both go faster. And this applies for what psychotherapy can do for spirituality as well. Roger Walsh, who is a very accomplished meditator and a teacher in the Buddhist tradition and a psychiatrist, teaches several types of meditation retreats. Often he'll teach Dzogchen retreats with Lama Surya Das. And Roger says that in these retreats, about 80% of the questions that he handles when he's dealing privately one-on-one with students is psychotherapeutic stuff. He said he spends about 80% of his time doing psychotherapy. And it's not, the spiritual techniques aren't as good at handling these psychotherapy components because they just really weren't designed for that. Now, you can sort of stay at it, you know, for 5 years meditating, and it'll probably get at some of it, but it might not. And you can also get it much, much faster with psychotherapy. So a large part of what's been happening over the last couple of decades is a judicious blend of psychotherapy with spiritual practices. And these are still, though, in their infancy. And we would like to see even a lot more work being done on it. But it's difficult to get it to happen because orthodox psychotherapists, on balance, are a little bit suspicious of higher transpersonal states and stages. And most of the higher transpersonal states and stages come to us from lineages that are a little suspicious about these other things. So it's just a classic case of getting, you know, people on different sides of the street together. But that's part of what Integral tries to do, try to bring these things together, because they clearly benefit from each other in enormous ways.
So what can be accomplished in therapy that I can't accomplish through meditation? I mean, if meditation's taking me up to these higher stages, then why do I need therapy
Maybe
at
in
all?
Just one line. Again, what happens in meditation is that a very specific type of capacity of the body mind is being exercised. It's a capacity for a certain type of awareness and cognition. And then other types of spiritual practice, again, it could be bhakti, and it's a certain type of emotion or affect is being exercised. In any of those cases, what's not being exercised is some dozen other developmental lines. And those developmental lines are not directly going to come under the scrutiny of meditative awareness. There's also the whole problem with various types of subpersonalities and dissociated aspects of awareness. Meditation helps lift a repression barrier. So in many cases, it will help facilitate some of this stuff rising. But it doesn't always do that. And it's not designed to do that. Whereas psychotherapy is. I mean, you're sitting there, and if you have a really charged relationship, if you're a woman, you have a really charged relationship, let's say with your father, and you're meditating, there's a whole dynamic that's going to come up, and you're not going to be able to discuss that with your spiritual teacher for many reasons, not the least of which is spiritual teacher probably doesn't know anything about it or how to deal with it or where it came from or why it's there. All you're told to do is bring awareness to it. So you're kind of on your own working this stuff out. Whereas psychotherapists are used to saying, okay, I want you to go into that feeling right now. I want you to bring up the image of your father. I want you to tell me exactly what you're feeling. Now I want you to play your father back and forth, do some role-playing here. Dozens of techniques that go directly into that complex, directly into that image, dig it up, look at it from five or six different angles, and carry it forward in a therapeutic dialogue. None of that happens in most of the meditative traditions. So it's a very ineffective tool for several of those reasons. Of the other developmental lines that are not being approached, some of those have pathologies that cannot be gotten at, and even in the area that you're working on, there can be dissociated pockets, unconscious subpersonalities, and so on. Those are hard to get at. So all of those things are stuff that tend to be focused on in psychotherapy that aren't focused on in meditative practice.
Well, you know, if spiritual teachers demonstrate uneven development, therapists are probably even more mixed up in terms of...
Well, and I can demonstrate it right now if you like. You don't have to look elsewhere. I mean, here sure. I am.
For examples of uneven development, we need go no further.
That's right.
But my question has to do with how do you choose a therapist? And yeah. I mean, do you necessarily need to choose a therapist who is at a higher stage of development in some way than you are, at least on certain lines, or what's the point?
And, yeah.
You know, what's Ken Wilber's guide to selecting a therapist?
Yeah. If you fall in love with a therapist, don't go to that one. <isn't it? laughs> A lot of what's done in psychotherapy doesn't have to do with switching levels. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Whereas in meditation, hopefully if it's going right, as we talked about earlier, you're going to shift a couple of levels. We said on average two stages every 4 years. And maybe if you keep doing it, like we said, but you know, in a lifetime, you could, you know, it's like what in the carnivals where they hit that thing and it goes up and hits the bell. Do you know that? What is that? It's like, ding. So, I mean, you can hit the seventh chakra, you know, with a good lifetime of whacking at that in the right way. Mostly psychotherapy doesn't do that. And the only place that psychotherapy, and psychotherapy is aware of this because they're, and by psychotherapy, I mean the general psychoanalytic, psychiatric, psychotherapeutic literature. They're very aware of the early stages of development. They've mapped them in very, very complex detail. I've included a lot of that in the maps that I give in integral psychology and transformations of consciousness. Because these early stages of development, if something goes wrong, they all create a very specific type of psychoneurotic problem, a very specific type of psychopathology. So really good psychotherapists can zero in on that because they know where the problem came from. They can deal with it a little bit more effectively. But what they're not dealing with is shifting a person's center of gravity. That usually doesn't happen. The only time it happens is that a certain type of pathology called borderline. It's called borderline because it's between psychosis, which is really bad, and neurosis, which is just sort of bad. So halfway between the two is called borderline. And borderline actually occurs in that seven-level scheme that we gave. Borderline occurs right around level two. And if a therapist has a borderline client, then they work on what's called characterological transformation. And that means they really are going to try to build structure and get them up to level three or four, because that's what the problem is. And that's actually called structure building techniques. And they're different from uncovering techniques which attempt to dig down into the unconscious and find the shadow and heal your neurosis. Now, most people in today's world come to a therapist and their center of gravity is level 3 or level 4. So let's say it's level 4, which is the rational, egoic, industrial, typical kind of person. Now, their problem, from a sort of psychotherapeutic stance, is that they have some shadow image, impulse, emotion, libido, power drive, something that was split off at level 1 or 2, and it's still down there in the basement causing trouble. So they're repressing it, and there's a repression barrier, and they have to uncover the shadow, befriend the shadow, and integrate it. So their center of gravity still stays roughly at level 4. That's not going to change very much. But what they are doing is going and finding these little sub-personalities that are lower levels and kind of bringing them up to level 4. So everybody's on, comes together, and then you're integrated at that level. So you're healthy at that level because you've integrated what you have at that level. So levels in therapy, the only time a therapist uses the concept of levels as we've been talking about it is if you come in and your center of gravity is level 3 or level 4 or level 5 or level 6, you're going to have very different value structures. Your whole languaging is going to be very, very different. And how I as a therapist talk to you, I will have to determine that based on where your center of gravity is, because if I use the wrong language, you won't hear what I'm saying. You won't work with me, and we won't have any sort of working alliance at all. And so a therapist, if they're integrally informed, will make a determination of where this person's center of gravity is and will language what they're doing in a way that that person can hear what they're saying. So that's a little bit of a detour. The question has to do about how do we choose therapists. And the reason it's a little bit different is that with a spiritual teacher, if it works well, you're going to transform. You're going to go through major transformations in consciousness, vertical, evolutionary, quantum leaps of one stage or two or more in your own development. That's a very different thing than going to a therapist, so to speak, because a therapist is primarily looking in, finding out, you know, the lower things that haven't been brought up to speed, so to speak. So you're not looking for a charismatic love relationship in a therapist. You're looking for somebody who's competent and can basically work with you. And then the criteria there are the same for the spiritual teachers to that degree that work on the technical side of the street. Check their reputation, you know, talk to other people who've gone to them. When you meet them, make sure that they're speaking a language that you feel comfortable with, and make sure you feel good about them in terms of how you interact with them.